when we connect this idea to artificial intelligence, yeah, to create images can become much easier than before. But you still, if you're an artist or if you're someone who is creating something and you're doing it professionally, then your job is still to stand behind the things that you do. Like, if I give you this grid of images without any context, then maybe you are not gonna watch it. If I'm not telling you to watch it and telling you, look, this is something interesting and these are the ideas behind it and this is why we're doing it, then maybe you're not even gonna notice it.
And we are live again. Welcome back to the Void Streaming Setup Studio. Wow, okay, perfect. Now here with us, we have Pablo and Ignacio. Am I right?
Hi there.
Hello.
Welcome. We're happy to have you here for today. You were also giving a keynote here, right, at the Remix Festival?
Yeah, just did a presentation, a masterclass about this project.
Okay.
That now you see in the background.
So we're...
Yeah, that is called Typologies of Delusion.
Okay. We're first going to maybe introduce you a bit to the setup, and then you can introduce yourselves and explain us about this very interesting project. So here at the studio, I mean, as you see, it's very obvious. You have the computer where you can move around, and over there you have... This device over here, it's a Stream Deck. And basically from there, we can select from different types of inputs. So either the camera, the computer, or a combination of both, like the camera and the computer and keying. And to keep it simple, you see the button that says cut over there?
Yeah.
If you click it, cut, you'll go to full screen mode. Yeah. And I mean, we can play around with this, but to go from, so basically cut is a button that goes from preview over there to program.
And what we see is preview?
Program is what it's like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Preview is what it's gonna be like.
Yeah.
And that being said, you can play with it and show us your project, please.
Okay, Pablo.
So.
You go.
Maybe Ignacio, you can navigate a bit and I can give an introduction to what is it, what we're seeing. What we're doing in this event, that it's about remixing media, is to take it one step further, which is reimagining media. And we work with a collection that that belongs to the Institute of Sound and Vision, or at least it's guarded by the Institute of Sound and Vision, that is called the Polygon Journal. It's a collection of newsreels that spans from the 1920s and stopped in the 1980s. And what we did was to train an image generation AI or AI tool with these images from the Polygon Journal, and then we started to ask the AI to create images that have very simple prompts. So what you see here is, for example, now what we see is a negative sick person, then we have a negative nurse. We have nouns and we have modifiers, so or nouns, let's say their roles, like the role of nurse, a police officer, a criminal, an engineer, a chef, a waiter, a waitress. And then we have the modifiers, which is like violent, joyful. Which other modifier do we have? Can you go scroll up down? Angry, sensual, cute. So we created this, we call it a visual typology, where there's an X and a Y axis, And yeah, we just ask a lot of questions to this AI and try to see what starts to give us. And we did it with different decades. So also what you see on the side is the decade of the 40s until the decade of the 80s. That's in a summary.
Yeah, basically we train like different models taking different decades. So given the polygon archive, we train the AI to understand what's like a polygon from the 1960s, 1940s, 1950s is. And in that process, like we basically the AI becomes aware of all the these biases on and all these like different entities that are present in the data set, but it's impossible to understand why the AI is like learning these things. So the way to ask the question is like to understand what the AI is seeing is just like to make this almost endless questions about like what's like a waitress, what's a painter, what's a soldier, what's like a, and to just to explore like how the AI is understanding the world after this whole process of like seeing everything.
Yeah, it is seeing the archive through the lens of an AI. And how we came up with it, yeah, something else that's interesting to mention is that when you see images that are AI generated, like in Twitter or Instagram, there's very elaborated prompts. Prompts are the instructions that you give to them, to the AI, to generate an image. Like you can say, here we have like a sensual scientist, for example. But what you see on internet is that you have these huge prompts, like a cinematic shot of a priest in the middle of a church in a gothic style, high detail, zero noise, like all those things. Which is okay, yeah. If you want to create an image that is very specific and using as a tool, that's
trending
that's
in Art Station.
Yeah, then yeah, trending in Art Station. That's all fine. But the experiment that we were running here was to really try to see, to give space to this AI to imagine. And we do that by giving a very, very simple prompt, which is a modern soldier. And then we don't add anything. And then we see the results that this AI makes. And that's also the reason why you see these images, they're all a little bit rough. Like you can find many more photorealistic images on the internet. But this is what the AI is really showing. And from that end, we also try to explore, I mean, the question of the biases, it's a very broad question because it's about our biases, how we see the world. We're also reflecting on how the world was seen through the media back in those decades. It's a constant, it is a variable that is present in every part of this research.
Can I ask a question? So you mentioned right now, all of these AI and machine, like generative AI algorithms are created or trained using existing audiovisual databases. So basically they inherit the way these databases see the world, which is very interesting, right? Because it's not actually how the world really was, but it's actually like how the world was depicted rather than like the thing itself. So in this sense, it is very interesting because it makes a history, or like the history of the world, the past, the history of media. I think this is an interesting, maybe problematic conflation of like the past and the media. Do you have any thoughts about it, or what's your relationship? How do you think about the past when doing this kind of project?
I mean, you're right. This is reimagining from using a technology from the present, looking through the lens of an archive that it was also biased by the time, by the media. I would say it's a bit of a conundrum But at the same time, I think that reality is always a big question. Like what is reality? And I think that's something that we will like. It's a question. It's like, what is a soul? Do humans have soul? Do animals have soul? What does it mean to have a soul? If it's a big question mark. And something that I've learned from my experience with AI and learning about all these things is that in the end, reality is more of a political concept, or it's something that is more discussed in the field of politics, because we cannot really access reality beyond the reality that we have. You have a different reality than mine. If I tell you that that I have a terrible pain in my stomach, you cannot say that it's not true. If I'm telling you that I'm like super hungry, and then I eat like three pizzas, and then I tell you I'm super hungry, you know, like you can say, well, the fact is that you ate a lot, so you shouldn't be hungry. But if I tell you, hey, I'm really hungry, you cannot say that my reality is not true. So I would talk about consistencies. In the end, what science does, what religion does, what archives make, what the media does, is to create a sense of reality that can be more or less consistent. If I'm as an individual, I'm being inconsistent, like now I'm hungry and then nothing happened and then I'm not hungry and then I'm hungry again, you know, then I'm being inconsistent, and then my reality maybe might feel less of a reality. But then what we're trying to do here, we're trying to explore, first of all, as an experiment, we are partly walking with a sense of direction, but actually we're not really sure where are we landing at. And we're exploring the reality of the archive, and also the reality of the AI right now. And we're doing it through an artwork, and we're sharing this artwork to see what it causes in other people. But as clear a statement or a message in this moment, besides what I've just said, I don't really have like clear answers. Do you
want to
add something?
No, I agree with Pablo that representation is always like political, like there is no objective truth. But that doesn't mean that we cannot like exchange and like have a conversation between different ways of representation, you know? I feel like, especially with AI, the space is lacking for like a way of like exploring this, like what the AI is looking at, you know? For example, like, GPT was a thing like 3 years ago, but ChatGPT just came out a year ago probably. And the thing is, like, what it changed was the interface, was the way that we humans have to like intertwine with the technology. But the technology in itself was not that like a big change until it was placed in that one interface that really made it like made the point on how to use it. I feel like with AI, we're like living that moment. Like we have this powerful tool to create new ways of representation, but we don't have any way of like asking what the AI is looking at. You know, we don't have like a language to have that conversation. So I feel like even with this like chaotic way of like placing like thousands of images one next to the other, trying to see what's similar between them, we're at least trying to like ask that question of how can we just like start to think about this like way of like representing the world. I mean,
kind of a Lumiere moment. The AI, we still have to understand it, but I do agree. I think I have just a very small question, but like when it comes to this, when it comes to new technologies that like give some sort of new output, there is, I think, always a question of personal perspective. And in that sense, the question is, While doing this work, what was something that like really changed the perspective that you had on this archive, for example, or something that really touched you when you an output, like before we were looking at something and you said, like, there is no head or something, right? And so do you have a memory while working on this of something that kind of, I don't know.
I feel like we're both really shocked on how the AI is trying to please you no matter what, you know? You can ask like for the most like a wrong thing to visualize and the AI is gonna do its best to just like do it without like any bias, without any, and that's what's quite problematic. For example, like we're using like nouns and modifiers. So at that point, at one point we have like this modifier of like nervous baby, sociable baby, okay? And eventually you see like sensual baby, enthusiastic. I mean, and the problem, well, sensual baby is just like a cute baby, which is good. Cute baby is like a sad baby. especially with some categories like soldier and some like things that have like really big biases, I think it's like
there's no grandmother.
Yeah.
There's not such a thing as a sensual grandmother.
Sensual grandfather is like.
There's also not such a thing as cute grandmother.
Yeah,
cute. That's something. Maybe it's cute for a grandmother, but yeah.
I feel like the idea of like the child and the grandmother are like so close to each other that they're just like things that are like the same thing. So it's definitely like a non-human way of experiencing the world, and I feel like for us that we are like. We just like know how humans experience the world. It's definitely interesting to see this like kind of like alien sensibility coming from out of nowhere, you know? And I feel like so many, there's like many times that we ask the AI to draw something and the result is like, I mean, it makes sense when you're trying to see the way it's looking at the world, but yeah, definitely like nothing like you would like experience on the first sight. So yeah, I feel like I really love the how this can become a conversation with something that is like not human for the very first time, and it's like a sensibility that in some ways it can like not improve but have like a this like understand ourselves from a different perspective that is like not necessarily humanistic.
I see it very human, to be honest, in the sense that I really see here, yeah. Like one of the things that amazes me most about AI image generation is just that it's a lot. I feel like here's something that I really like about your website is you just, wrong gesture, yeah. You just show how, like, you know, the ability to produce so many images is there right now, and this is kind of like overwhelming, right? I feel like something that's an actual threshold is that like we have this ability to create these millions and millions and millions and millions of images. But what I wanted to say that I feel it's very human is that again, all of these images I think make sense to us or can be there. Because we're seeing the history of media or the history of television or the history of cinema. Like I feel we only can interpret the specific picture of like disappointed girl or whatever as a disappointed girl because we have also all of this mediatic culture behind us. So in a sense, yes, it's like processed through a machine, but also it's processed through our own history of media production, right?
Yeah, the stereotypes from the media are also the stereotypes that we have been endorsing. And something that I wanted to mention, well, this project is called Typologies of Delusion. And the typologies element is precisely by present by making these visual typologies. Something that I was also talking about during the presentation is that in the history of art and science, there is a long tradition of typologies. Like, for example, what we're seeing now is the work of Hila and there's a couple, the Bechers. They were photographers, Hilda and Bernd Becher. They were German photographers who, between the 60s or 50s and the 90s, they were making architectonic photography of industrial landscapes. Not landscapes, but industrial constructions. And in a way, new from the work that they were doing in comparison to the rest of photography as it was treated back then, was the fact that they were putting the images one next to the other. And instead of making one big photography, it was a visual typology of one object. What we're seeing here, these are also the Bechers. So this is a visual typology of different houses in Germany. And these are all different houses, and they are one next to the other. And what you start to see when you have these images one next to the other is not one image, but you start to visualize a concept. The concept of the architectonic concept of a house, in this case. So applying this to the project was an idea that started because you see a lot of images on the internet, and they're all treated like unique images. But there's so many, and the particular quality that image generation has using AI is quantity. So we decided to create a huge amount of images. This is a typology of I think more than 5,000 images. It's or 4,750 images. And altogether, they offer a visualization of the concept of the polygon journal. So yeah, that's the part, that's why it's called Typologies of Delusion. And delusion comes from the fact that AI, they create synthetic images and they start to imagine things without necessarily being truthful, but trying to fulfill the requests and the longings that we as humans have. We want to see certain things, and this AI can provide that. Is that something that the AI knows or doesn't know? Is it something that they consider appropriate or not? That's not the point. They're just making up something to fulfill what we're requesting.
Yeah, no, that's a super interesting link, the typological link. In a way, here we're seeing a typology of typologies, right? Because each of these images is actually created from a bunch of different images that are already the result of an average or a combination and creating a mean out of a typology. And now we're seeing like a typology of a bunch of different...
Well, I wouldn't say there is a typology of typologies because, you know, maybe here we have nerves, but maybe we didn't even give one nerve to the model. I don't even remember. But if we didn't give a nerve to the model, then this model starts to make up something. And that's a delusion. Starts to hallucinate a nerve because based on some other information that it has and other images that the base model has, it sort of gets an idea of what is a nurse.
Well, I guess the base model might have already a nurse somewhere over there.
A what?
The base model, because if I understood you correctly, retrained the model that was already pre-trained.
Yeah, that's right.
Which one was the model that you used?
Stable Diffusion XL.
Stable Diffusion.
And we created like a LoRa, which is each decade. So the LoRa is like a prosthesis. It's like an expansion of the model that modifies the weights of the original model. So yeah, there is like a part of like a Stable Diffusion XL in this, of course, too.
And that's very interesting, actually, because Yeah, I mean, Stable Diffusion is one of these examples of open source.
And I think it's one of the, it shows that the open culture is like the only way that this conversation can be had. I mean, this whole project wouldn't be possible to be done in Midjourney or any other close standards. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, of course, like the fact that it's open allows like for many people to just like be part of this conversation, and it allows in many ways the conversation to happen in the very first place.
Yeah, and then I guess there is also, because I don't want to get be wrong with this, but I think there is also a difference between open access and open source, in the sense of like I think some of the Git, for example, it's open access. Like you can use it for training new models, but you cannot know what are like the data and where the data come from, right? And I think this is very important for such a project in which like.
I mean, I completely agree, and I feel like we don't have a way of like understanding this like black box phenomenon yet. You know, with code, it used to be like the tradition, like compiled code is a black box, so you cannot like go from the compiled code from the executable file back to the code. You know, so we agree that that's closed, but with these models, it's like when it's already trained. Yeah, how can you like understand what was like given to the model, you know?
Is this huge box with a lot of pictures that you will take
and what metadata
one entire life to look into all of them?
I know, it's impossible. I mean, like, some people are discovering like that, like some Shutterstock images were used in training like Midjourney just because it creates like a Shutterstock like
watermark
every now and then. So
by the way, Shutterstock just launched their own
model,
of course.
I how do you guys feel about it? I mean, regarding, do you think like it's like, is it okay to like say, okay, I created this image, so you cannot like train models on that image that I created? I mean,
I even like the trademark, to be honest. I use images with trademark on top of it.
Just
maybe this is an answer. I don't know.
It's a technical way.
For me, it depends. I feel like, I mean, I'm very pro open culture. So in the sense, like, I like the idea of images being freely available online. But on the other side, online is not anymore. Like, we had this idea in the early 2000s about the online being this free public space. And that's not a reality. Like the online is basically a bunch of mega corporations and mega corporations that are profiting of these commons or of this openness. So in this sense, in the current state of the internet, I feel it's very icky, very, very tricky, because I think it also retrospectively justifies a bunch of the bad practices of these platforms. Like, hey, we've been gathering all of this data, or we are scraping or using all of this data because we have to do an AI. Yeah. So basically now they have like an excuse to continue with the very practices that have come into doubt and criticism in the last 5 to 6 years. Yeah. And now they have like the AI card to say like, hey, this is needed unless.
I completely agree, but I feel like the idea that we're like creating something out of this like big data sets for such a long time, this like unconscious the idea that like okay, Shakespeare is like a style, you know, it's like the idea of Shakespeare. How can you copyright that? It's impossible. So for a long time it was not possible to create anything out of like all the works of Shakespeare, but now we can abstract that. So I feel like in some way like the concept of copyright, it's been tensioned so much that it won't be able to handle these like generations of images, you know? If I can like take every frame from every movie of Wes Anderson and create like infinite movies from Wes Anderson, what's Wes Anderson in the first place? It's a style, you know? So like saying that I own that style doesn't make any sense anymore.
I agree and disagree with you in the sense like, I mean, I feel like maybe being very cynical and gloomy about it, in the future that people, so Wes Anderson, for example, would be a person who would be able to trademark his style as a personal brand, right? And and movie making would be a creation of an own personal brand, which I'm highly against.
Of course.
But on the other side, I do think that we had other tools and other methods to use a common heritage before, right? You could, again, using the example of Wes Anderson, he is also remixing and was inspired by a bunch of different filmmakers and was critically appropriating all of that work. And I feel, but this is just me personally, that AI takes away part of this critically appropriating because as we can see, actually, many of these pictures, many of the decisions of those appropriation are not made or are not made by us.
It's not that creative. It's not a creative process
and
anymore.
For example, as a huge cinephile that I am, I like to go and see the movie, like the original movie, and have a reading of the movie. And
because you enjoy to see
exactly
how those decisions were made.
And then if I
made
a movie, I would have this personal engagement and recreation of the style. So it's yes and no, because I disagree with the personal brand. Let's just like copyright ourselves. Mm. But on the other hand, I'm not very like I think there are a lot of different ways of remixing, and I feel like AI can play a part.
Yeah.
But I'm still not very sure how.
I agree, and I'm not saying that like AI is gonna finish with copyright. Uh-huh. I'm just saying that it creates some tension in the space that makes it hard to say like, oh, that image is mine, so you cannot like take away from it, you cannot learn from it, you cannot like use it to do something that is related to it. I feel like it makes everything more like a remix in the way that it has been like for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm. I want to say something. Yeah, I think that the question of copyrights is, again, I don't have one answer to that, and I think that there's many possibilities. I see that there is, we have technology that is developed enough to allow us to, for example, keep copyrights and through, let's say, micropayment systems to clear the copyrights or likeness of the work that we do for training on, this case, a large language model that would be for text or images. We have the technology. We don't have the infrastructure. We haven't implemented that technology. And some of these technologies, they have a very bad reputation because technologies, they can be used for different things. So what I think when I'm saying this is blockchain technology. If we had a system like a blockchain decentralized, if we had a public blockchain where artists have their wallets, and where they can give rights for the usage of their images without having to authorize it all the time, but just making a system of micropayments that is something that can be done with blockchain, then we could more easily create big data sets and then pay the artists for the use of images. Now, that infrastructure is not there. The technology is there, and then we would have to ask the artist to create an account and all that, and then there's this whole reputation that people want to get rich with blockchain, and then it just doesn't work. I've also had this conversation in a more academic setting, and many people who are working with AI in the humanities and also in computer science, they are completely reluctant about blockchain because they see all these people like who want to get rich with crypto, which it is a part of a very present reality, but that doesn't mean that the technology is not solid and that could allow to do that kind of things in a decentralized way and in giving independence also to the artists. So that's something about copyrights that, and if we see the bigger picture, these also comes down to the fact that we need to implement new policies. And these policies, they can follow a status quo that is ruled by corporations and that is slow and it will like will be always changing, or we can do something maybe more revolutionary that will bring more instability, that will also be more fragmented, but it's also another scenario, it's also another possibility. And in the end, how are we gonna do things? What's gonna happen with copyrights? I think it just depends how things will evolve. There are maybe more desirable and undesirable ways, but in the end, it's like how this is gonna end up. We will see. We will see how culture evolves. And can I say something else?
Of course.
Also about these models, something that I think that would be interesting to see is that these models, they can also invite us to think in a more ethical way on how we are using AI. And there's many dimensions to this, because there's also the environmental, the electrical environmental consumption of AI, but I will leave that a little bit on the side to talk about other things. I was thinking, for example, it would be very nice, and this is something that maybe I would like to do, to create a chat and an AI that is a chat that can be used for many of the things that we're using these chats now, like for example to write an email or basic communication, but that is only informed by copyright-free text. And basically this means text from one century ago and beyond. If you think about it, what's the problem to receive an email from a friend or from someone that is written in the style of Shakespeare? Like, it's a bit unpractical, it's a bit out of fashion, and it will definitely look that you didn't write it. But it can be also a statement. Like, you say, look, I wrote this with an AI. I mean, I'm saying what I wanted to say. I bring my message across in the style of Shakespeare, not because I wanted to have it in the style of Shakespeare, but because, you know, this is an ethical way of doing it. I'm not using the style of anybody else. It's everything copyright free. And this is a way of using AI, for example.
This is very interesting. But also, I think looking at open source, it is not something that is just from a century ago. I think there is something that is still going on. We like as Void, we're part of a research center based in Amsterdam, in which we publish since 2004, and everything is published under Creative Commons. And that's copyright free, right? And in that sense, it's not only us, but it's a big movement, not as big as, copyright. But in that sense, I think it will be very interesting, but not necessarily connected to the, at least personally, I wouldn't see it connected to the past, but connected to a very specific and maybe niche community that decide to do not put their work under copyright. So it's very political, there is like a very specific standpoint, and I think it will be interesting to see what is the outcome of that. And
I feel like there's like a beautiful space where you can open source models in that way that everyone can create a piece of art inspired by the same model, which becomes the artist in some way. I feel like this like it's a new way of like using art in a way that it creates just like a, it creates not an art piece, it creates an artist. And mm-hmm. I feel like it's also like a nice possibility with this kind of technology.
Yeah, or a meme of an artist.
Or a meme, or a statistical, like weights and biases of what an artist can be. But it's not that different from what like Warhol was doing, just like replicating the same thing over and over. Mm. In this case, like the replication becomes just like the style.
You know, like this is, for me, it's interesting and still going back to the same, like the place in which we work. One of the research, it's going to memes. We published two books about meme theory.
Oh, cool.
And there is a big discussion between Chloe Arkenbaut, is the author of these books, and we always discuss about the issue of copyright. Copyright is the main thing, because memes is this clearly open object that goes around the internet.
Of course.
But then actually there is a big discussion about copyright and memes, because there are some channels that put like trademarks on their memes because
Do you think that like a meme can have an author, or is just like the community?
This is actually an ongoing discussion. I don't think so.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you ask my same colleague, in which I shared a lot of things with, she thinks that actually it might be, because it really depends on the subject. It really depends on, maybe it's a very sensible topic, and maybe it makes sense that it's... So in that sense, it's very interesting how this can lead to not only really legal question, because of sometimes copyright is connected to the legal aspect, but I think it's a very political...
I feel like maybe the idea of copyright is wrong, that in the way that we're trying to create something that is not real, because if I own this computer and you take my computer, I don't have a computer anymore. But if I have an idea and I tell you my idea, we both have the idea, So the concept of that you can own an idea might not even be possible, but might not even be a thing. We can pretend like it's a thing, I own this style, I own this concept, but it's actually not something that can be done. I know how you guys feel.
Yeah, actually, sorry, I just jumped in, so I don't remember all the thread of this, but I don't know if it's a question or kind of an observation that came up while you were talking about this thing, because I remember when, ChatGPT and Midjourney, they all became big, and then there was all the, especially digital artists, that they were super enraged, you were stealing our data, blah, blah, blah. They are right on one end, but what for me is more, I don't know, I don't really get if it's about ownership and or labor, and this labor where it comes from, because at the beginning of the internet everything was kind of this utopia open source thing, and on one way it's like when we see that we can get profit from something, we're pissed because we're not getting it anymore, but when others, big corporation, they steal our labor in a more kind of hidden way, we don't bother because we're not seeing it. So for me, it's not even about, of course, I don't know so much about this, but protecting this, or as you're saying it now, an idea. So what do I do this for? It's my job, so I'm losing my job, or someone is stealing my art. What is it about? And where do you position yourself in this? Would you rather wish for more kind of, efficient data protection and copyright systems, or kind of to put in the in the conversation the reality that who's exploiting us is a third party that is very well covered legally and economically. So it's I feel sometimes that it's kind of war of the poor.
I know.
And it's, when this, AI image
and even stuff, the internet, I felt
it was, but you woke up really late. It's really bad to say, but I really felt that it's obvious and it's going on since so much, and it's so many years that artists are talking about remediation and what is an image and blah, blah, blah. So where do you position yourself in this?
I feel like we have different opinions regarding this one topic. So I'll just say that for me, I feel like it's really, the question is so hard, because we usually combine this part of creation, artistic creation, and how are we going to make money out of that? And those two questions don't have to be necessarily intertwined. I get that artists want to make a living out of that. For a brief moment, let's take away that concept and just acknowledge that artistic creation exists because we need to say something. It's not about how you're gonna pay the bills. It's what do you wanna say?
You have to pay the bills nonetheless.
Yeah, but if no one will be paying for art, people will still be doing art. I mean, if no one will be paying for scientific discoveries, people will still be doing scientific discoveries. I mean, some people are going to like look for knowledge because that's a thing that human beings do. I mean, I acknowledge that we want to pay the bills. I mean, I'm also like, I'm, you know? But I feel like from an ethical standpoint, the right way to approach this problem is like every human being should be to have access to all the information that all the human beings have produced before them, you know? Then the problem becomes like, how are we going to pay the bills? How are we going to pay for that whole like knowledge that is being produced? But I find it like, it's like we should not forget that the ethical standpoint is like, just because you are a human, you should be allowed to watch every movie that has ever been made, listen to every song that has ever been written, you know? Like, you play with every computer software and program. I feel like if we look for that, like, utopia, then we can focus on the question, okay, how are we going to pay for this? And it might be like a universal income, it might be like decentralized, like economy that you pay for whatever you're using, whatever. But like, but the ethical part is like, hey, we're all on this together, we're all human beings, like you should be allowed to like watch every film that has ever been made, you know? I don't know if you guys share.
Yeah, I mean, what I can say, I think that, first of all, I'm not fully against copyright. I think that copyright, it's a model that by protecting certain ideas or media or artworks, it allows, first of all, for the artists to gain their royalties and to be able to produce more of that. At the same time, it allows to create an economy that is fertile, because if there wasn't copyrights, then there would be a lot of art that simply couldn't be afforded to be done with the economic system that we have, and then we just don't have it because it's not a basic need, at least not to survive. So yeah, that on one. From one point of view. Now, to what extent is copyright something that needs to be protected? And I'm thinking, for example, I mean, I'm just thinking out loud. What when we connect this idea to artificial intelligence? Yeah, to create images can become much easier than before. But you still, if you're an artist or if you're someone who is creating something and you're doing it professionally, then your job is still to stand behind the things that you do. Like, if I give you this grid of images without any context, then maybe you are not gonna watch it. If I'm not telling you to watch it and telling you, look, this is something interesting and these are the ideas behind it and this is why we're doing it, then maybe you're not even gonna notice it. And that is work. And to, you know, to contact the people, to immerse in a certain context, and from immersing in that context, in the case of an artist with objects, in the case of a philosopher with ideas, of a writer with a book, to have something that you bring into discussion, into this context, and then you walk around and you share and you say, look, this is what I think. Maybe it's not like a concept, but it's an object, or it is a piece of music, or by engaging in that context, then that's how we build society, that's how we enrich our culture. And we need to find a way to finance that. So there is work, there is copyright. Something that I'm kind of hesitant, though, is when some inventions, they become a property that needs to be all the time be paid for. And for example, we have this installation. This installation is made with a grid that is partly built by Ignacio, but it's also.
Are we going to open source it now?
Yeah, but part of it is also taken from libraries, And we didn't pay for these libraries, and we didn't have to skip any copyright for that. But what if everything had to be paid for? And this is something that, where we live on right now. We have to pay a lot of rights for many things, and if you don't know your way around it, then you have to pay for it. And many of those things, they are like okay, there was people who work a lot to build that thing, but then it's done, and then you don't need to walk around with it and promote new ideas or to make a better society with that. It's just made. So that's where
I just wonder, what do you guys think about like the whole question about like what's the limit for you? Do you think that it should be copy? We should be able to. I
can
guard the access to this.
Yeah, I don't want that. What I said it was taken wrong, because it's not that I'm against copyright, but I just feel sometimes that there is an imbalance between, you know, taking responsibility and actual, you know, like it feels always that the user is responsible for the gain of the artist, but actually the kind of platform or anything that is mediating this is making a lot bunch of money out of it, and there is like this is super unfair. Like I really don't see a fair way. Like it's always kind of putting the conversation on this sense of guilt that we are so bad because we are pirating.
You should be paying for this.
Yeah, but on the other hand, like there is this always this kind of evil figure, the 1%, the corporation that. They are so, you know, I would just wish for kind of this universal utopia, like, artists are paid, but this should be a thing. And also, like, I don't remember, there was this kind of award of, and always, like, the artist's work is seen like something extra, unnecessary, you know, something that it's, you can live, survive without that. But actually, this is not true, and there are a lot of research that, actually, you can't live with that. Everything, like reading a book, like listening to music, is not an extra. It's something that it's really important, and I really don't like how these flames, also around the AI, is always kind of putting the person that is using the AI, like, you are the reason that my art is stolen, you know, you're evil, and something like this. And on the other hand, it's the regulation of that. Anyways, out of our control, and we should be mad at that thing, not at the fact that we are using a tool, because that is simply a tool. It's, and also all this narrative of, you know, the evil AI that will take control and destroy us all, and then we are stuck, and someone else is using it in a very prolific way, and making a lot of money and keeping us even more under this control, and in a way putting also us against each other. So I would just, I don't know, I don't really have an answer to this, but my opinion is that in this direction is very wrong. Like, I'm not a total accelerationist, I don't know how to translate this, but I also, you know, kind of fear the fact that we will really lose the control on the hardware
agency
part, you know?
Or control on what's being
happening
generated.
Inside, because the AI is not doing magic, but it's a huge computation. And no one can, you know, that's the way a computer does it, because we can do that.
I know.
So,
I know.
Yeah, for me, it's just we should address the problem to someone else, not on the person. Of course, like, we need to be responsible, and we're not, you know, unaware of what are the implications of using this kind of softwares. But still, I think they're very useful, and it's a shame that it's always this kind of feeling of how I'm doing something wrong, I should be, you know, the good guy, and then you're just, you know, being left behind in a way. So this is my feeling.
Yeah, and I agree, like, the risk is real, you know. I mean, the fact that we can generate 7,000 images in one night is like, it definitely like takes out a thing that was uniquely human. Now it can be like done by one person, like, in really a few hours. So, yeah, I feel like since the way that we have for paying for arts is already problematic, you know, this just like shows all these contradictions that are already emerging in the system. I hope that the answer to this is like to create a new system that actually provides for new ways of like supporting the arts. Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that crypto is gonna be, but like, but I mean, most countries are already paying for art by taxes. You know, like this, like I mean, we are supporting the in my country, Chile. It's like not a really developed country, but every movie that is made in Chile is paid by the state.
Yeah, but Chile is not a massive film industry.
Mexico is like
has a lot to desire, but but sorry, I didn't want to interrupt, we have to wrap up because we have another conversation coming up soon.
It has been an amazing conversation.
Yeah, thank you so much for popping up and showing us your work. Thanks.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Yeah, no, exactly. I would like to talk about, like, but for us, I think we could just meet in the drinks and continue. But it was also a very long day, and we have another one, and I think it's gonna be the last one. That's last conversation.
We have another one.
Yes, of course. But. No, really, thank you so much. It was unexpected, but also the most
that's also like unexpected. But this is also the entire point of being here. We're in the middle of the hallway for basically two people to pass by and hop in. So this is wonderful. Like way better than expected, actually.
And I love the format. Like I mean, the camera.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.